Chapter 52. Choices. Laying down his razor, Rand wiped the last flecks of lather from his face and began doing up his shirt laces. Early morning sunlight streamed through the square arches leading to his bedchamber balcony. The heavy winter curtains had been hung, but tied back to let in a breath of air. He would be presentable when he killed Ravin. The thought loosed a bubble of rage floating up out of his belly. He forced it back down. He would be presentable and calm, cold, no mistakes. When he turned from the gilt-framed mirror, Avienda was sitting on her rolled-up pallet against the wall, beneath a hanging portraying impossibly high gold towers. He had offered to have another bed put in the room, but she claimed mattresses were too soft for sleeping. She was watching him intently, her shift forgotten in one hand. He had been careful about not looking around from his shaving to give her time to dress, but aside from her white stockings, she wore not a stitch. "I would not shame you in front of other men," she said abruptly. "Shame me? What do you mean?" She stood in one smooth motion, surprisingly pale where the sun had not touched her, slender and hard-muscled, yet with roundnesses and softnesses that haunted his dreams. This was the first time he had allowed himself to look at her openly when she flaunted herself, but she did not seem aware of it. Those big blue-green eyes were fixed on his. "I did not ask Sulin to include Enyla or Samara or Lamel that first day. Nor did I ask them to watch you, or to do anything if you faltered. That was only their own concern." "You just let me think they would try to carry me off like a babe if I wavered. A fine distinction." His wry tone flew right past her. "It made you take care when you needed to." "I see," he said dryly. "Well, I thank you for the promise not to shame me, in any case." She smiled. "I did not say that, Randolthor. I said not in front of other men. If you require it, for your own good." Her smile deepened. "Do you mean to come like that?" He gestured irritably, taking her in from head to toe. She had never shown the slightest embarrassment at being naked in front of him. Far from it. But she glanced down at herself, then at him looking at her, and her face reddened. Suddenly she was surrounded by a flurry of dark brown wool and white algota, flying into clothes so quickly that he could have thought she was channeling them on. "Have you arranged everything?" came from the middle of it. "Have you spoken to the wise ones? You were gone late last night. Who else comes with us? How many can you take? No wetlanders, I hope. You cannot trust them, especially not tree killers. Can you truly carry us to Camelin in 1 hour? Is it like what I did the night? I mean to say, how will you do it? I cannot like trusting myself to things I do not know and cannot understand."
"Everything is arranged, Avienda."
Why was she babbling and refusing to meet his eye? He had met with Ruark and the other chiefs still near the city. They had not truly liked his plan, but they saw it in terms of Jito, and none thought he had any other choice. They discussed it quickly, agreed, and then turned the talk to other things. Nothing to do with Forsaken or Ilion or battle at all. Women, hunting, whether Kyrian and Brandy could compare with Usquai, or wetlander Tabak with what was grown in the waste. For an hour he had almost forgotten what lay ahead. He hoped that the prophecy of Rudion was somehow wrong, that he would not destroy those men. The wise ones had come to him, a delegation of more than 50, alerted by Avienda herself and led by Amis and Melaine and Bear, or maybe by Soralia. With wise ones, often it was difficult to tell who was in charge. They had not come to talk him out of anything, Giotto again, but to make sure he understood that his obligation to Elaine did not outweigh that to the Aiel, and they had kept him in the meeting room until they were satisfied. It was that, or lift them bodily out of his way to reach the door. When they wanted to be, those women were as good at ignoring shouts as Egwene had become. We'll find out how many I can take when I try. Only Aiel. With luck, Mylan and Maringill, and the rest would not know he was gone until after he went. If the Tower had spies in Cairhien, maybe the Forsaken did as well. And how could he trust people to keep secrets who could not see the sun rise without trying to use the fact in Deus de Mar? By the time he had shrugged into a red coat, embroidered in gold, a fine wool eminently suitable for a royal palace, in Camelin or Cairhien, the thought amused him in a bleak sort of way. By that time, Avienda was almost dressed. It was a wonder to him how she could scramble into her clothes so quickly and yet have nothing out of place. "A woman came last night while you were away."
Light.
He had forgotten Kolaver. "What did you do?" She paused in tying the laces of her blouse, eyes trying to bore a hole in his head, but her tone was offhand.
"I took her back to her own chambers, where we talked for a time. There will be no more tree-killer flip-skirts scratching at your tent flap, Randall Thor."
"The very end I aimed at, Avienda."
"Light, did you hurt her badly? You can't go around beating ladies. These people cause me enough trouble without you bringing more."
She sniffed loudly and went back to her laces.
"Ladies. A woman is a woman, Randall Thor, unless she is a wise one," she added judiciously. "That one sits lightly this morning, but her bruises can be hidden, and with a day's rest she will be able to leave her chambers. And she knows the right of matters now. I told her if she caused you any bother again, any bother, I would come talk to her once more. A much longer talk. She will do as you say, when you say it. Her example will teach others. The tree killers understand nothing else."
Rand sighed.
Not a method he would or could have chosen, but it might actually work. Or it might only make Kolaver and the others more sly from now on.
Avienda might not be worried about repercussions against herself. In fact, he would be surprised if she had even considered the possibility. But a woman who was high seat of a powerful house was not the same as a young noblewoman of lesser rank. Whatever the effect for him, Avienda could find herself set upon in some dark hallway and give 10 times what she had given Kolaver, if not worse.
"Next time, let me handle matters my way. I am the Ka Karn, remember?"
"You have shaving lather on your ear, Randall Thor."
Muttering to himself, he snatched up the striped towel and shouted, "Come!" to a rap at the door. Asmodian entered, pale lace at the neck and cuffs of his black coat, harp case slung on his back, and a sword at his hip. It might have been winter for the coolness of his face, but his dark eyes were wary.
"What do you want, Natail?" Rand demanded. "I gave you your instructions last night."
Asmodian wet his lips and glanced once at Avienda, who was frowning at him.
"Wise instructions. I suppose I might learn something to your advantage, remaining here and watching. But the talk this morning is all of the shrieks from Lady Kolaver's apartments last night. It is said she displeased you. Though no one seems to know quite how. That uncertainty is making everyone step lightly. I doubt anyone will breathe in the next few days without considering what you might make of it."
Avienda's face was a picture of insufferable self-satisfaction.
"So you want to come with me?" Rand said softly. "You want to be at my back when I face Ravine?"
"What better place for the Lord Dragon's bard? But better yet, say under your eye, where I can show my loyalty.
I am not strong.
Asmodian's grimace seemed natural enough in any man making that admission, but for an instant Rand sensed Cyadine filling the other man, felt the taint that twisted Asmodian's mouth. Just for an instant, but long enough for him to judge. If Asmodian had drawn as much as he could, he would be hard-pressed to match one of the wise ones who could channel.
Not strong, yet perhaps I can help in some small way.
Rand wished he could see the shield Lanfear had woven. She had said it would dissipate with time, but Asmodian did not seem able to channel any more strongly now than he had the first day he was in Rand's hands. Perhaps she had lied, to give Asmodian false hope, to make Rand believe the man would grow strong enough to teach him more than he ever would. It would be like her. He was uncertain whether that was his thought or Luz Theron's, but he was sure it was true. The long pause made Asmodian lick his lips again.
A day or two will not matter here. You will be back by then, or dead. Let me prove my loyalty. Perhaps I can do something. A whisker more weight on your side might shift the balance.
Once more Cyadine poured into him, just for a moment. Rand felt a sensation of strain, yet it was still a feeble flow.
You know my choices. I am clinging to that tuft of grass on the cliff's lip, praying for it to hold one more heartbeat. If you fail, I am worse than dead. I must see you win and live.
Suddenly eyeing Avienda, he seemed to realize he might have said too much. His laugh was a hollow sound.
Else how can I compose the songs of the Lord Dragon's glory? A bard must have something to work with.
The heat never touched Asmodian. A trick of the mind, he claimed, not the power. But beads of sweat oozed down his forehead now. Under his eyes, or left behind? Perhaps to run looking for a hiding place when he began wondering what was happening in Camelon. Asmodian would be the man he was until he died and was reborn. And perhaps even after.
Under my eyes, Rand said quietly. And if I even suspect that where that whisker falls might displease me, I put my trust in the Lord Dragon's mercy, Asmodian murmured, bowing. With the Lord Dragon's permission, I will wait outside.
Rand glanced around the room as the man departed, backing away still half-bowed. His sword lay on the gilt-lined chest at the foot of the bed, dragon-buckled sword belt wrapped around the scabbard, and the Shonshan spearhead. The killing today would not be with steel, not on his part. He touched his pocket, felt the hard-carved shape of the fat little man with his sword. That was the only sword he needed today. For a moment he considered skimming to Tyr to take back Kalendor, or even to Rhoideon for what was hidden there. He could destroy Ravin with either before the man knew he was there. He could destroy Camelon itself with either. But could he trust himself? So much power. So much of the one power. Cyadine hung there just out of sight. The taint seemed part of him. Rage oozed just beneath the surface. At Ravin, at himself. If it broke loose, and he held even Kalendor, what would he do? He would be invincible. With the other, he could skim to Shael Ghul itself, put an end to it all, end it now one way or another. One way or another. No. He was not in this alone. He could not afford anything but victory. The world rides on my shoulders, he murmured. Suddenly he yelped and clapped a hand to his left buttock. It felt as though a needle had stabbed him, but he did not need the goosebumps fading on his arms to tell him what had happened.
"'What was that for?' he growled at Avienda. "'Just to see whether the Lord Dragon was still made of flesh, like the rest of us mortals.'
"'I am,' he said flatly, and seized Sidene. All the sweetness, all the filth, just long enough to channel briefly. Her eyes widened, but she did not flinch, only looked at him as if nothing had occurred at all. Still, as they crossed the anteroom, she rubbed furtively at her bottom when she thought he was looking the other way. It seemed she was of ordinary flesh, too.
Burn me, I thought I'd taught her a few manners.
Pulling open the door, he stepped out and stood staring. Matt was leaning on his odd spear with that broad-brimmed hat pulled low, a little apart from Osmodian, but that was not what took him aback. There were no maidens. He should have known something was wrong when Osmodian came in unannounced. Avienda was looking around in amazement, as if she expected to find them behind one of the tapestries.
"Melindra tried to kill me last night," Matt said,
and Rand stopped thinking about maidens.
"One minute we were talking, the next she was trying to kick my head off."
Matt told the story in short sentences. The dagger with the golden bees. His conclusions. He closed his eyes when he told how he had ended it. "A simple Stark. I killed her." And opened them again quickly, as if he saw something behind his eyelids he did not care to see.
"I'm sorry you had to do that," Rand said quietly,
and Matt gave a bleak shrug.
"Better her than me, I suppose. She was a dark friend."
He did not sound as if it made much difference.
"I will settle with Samael, just as soon as I'm ready."
"And how many will that leave?"
"The Forsaken are not here," Avienda snapped. "And neither are the Maidens of the Spear. Where are they? What have you done, Randall Thor?"
"Me? There were 20 right here when I came to bed last night, and I haven't seen one since."
"Perhaps it is because Matt..."
Osmodian began, and stopped, when Matt looked at him, a tight-mouthed blend of pain and readiness to hit something.
"Do not be fools," Avienda said in a firm voice. "Fardarai's Mai would not claim toe against Matt Cawthon for this. She tried to kill him, and he killed her. Even her near-sisters would not, if she had had any. And no one would claim toe against Randall Thor for what another did unless he ordered it done. You have done something, Randall Thor, something great and dark, or they would be here."
"I have done nothing," he told her sharply, "and I don't intend to stand here discussing it. Are you dressed for the ride south, Matt?"
Matt shoved a hand into his coat pocket, fingering something. He usually kept his dice and dice cup in there.
"Camelin, I'm tired of them sneaking up on me. I want to sneak up on one of them for a change. I just hope I get the bloody pat on the head instead of the bloody flower," he added with a grimace.
Rand did not ask him what he meant. Another Ta'veren. Two together to twist chance, perhaps. No way to tell how, or even if, but
it seems like we'll be together a little longer.
Matt looked more resigned than anything else. Before they had gone far down the tapestry-lined corridor, Moraine and Egwene met them, gliding along together as if the day held no more ahead than a walk in one of the gardens. Egwene, cool-eyed and calm, golden great serpent on her finger, really could have been an Aes Sedai despite her Aiel clothes and shawl and the folded scarf around her temples, while Moraine... Gold threads caught the light, faintly streaking Moraine's gown of shimmering blue silk. The small blue stone on her forehead, hanging from its gold chain fastened in her waves of dark hair, shone as brightly as the large gold-set sapphires around her neck. Hardly suitable garb for what they intended, yet in his red coat, Rand could not comment. Perhaps it was being here, where House Damodred had once held the Sun Throne, but Moraine's graceful carriage was more regal than he remembered ever seeing it. Not even the presence of Jason Tail could spoil that queenly serenity with surprise. But amazingly, she gave Matt a warm smile.
"So you are going too, Matt. Learn to trust the pattern. Do not waste your life attempting to change what cannot be changed."
From Matt's face, he might have been considering changing his mind about being there at all, but the Aes Sedai turned from him without a trace of worry.
"These are for you, Rand."
"More letters," he said. One bore his name in an elegant hand that he recognized immediately.
"From you, Moraine."
The other carried Tom Marilyn's name. Both had been sealed with blue wax, apparently with her great serpent ring, impressed with the image of the snake biting its own tail.
"Why write me a letter? And sealed?"
"You've never been afraid to say whatever you wanted to say to my face. If I ever forgot it, Avienda has been reminding me that I'm only flesh and blood."
"You have changed from the boy I first saw outside the Winespring Inn."
Her voice was a soft silver chiming.
"You are hardly the same at all. I pray you have changed enough."
Egwene murmured something low. Rand thought it was, "I pray you have not changed too much." She was frowning at the letters as if she too wondered what was in them. So was Avienda. Moraine went on more brightly, even briskly.
"Seals ensure privacy. That contains things I wish you to think on. Not now, when you have time for thinking. As for Tom's letter, I know no safer hands than yours in which to place it. Give it to him when you see him again. Now, there is something you must see at the docks."
"The docks," Rand said. "Moraine, this morning of all mornings, I've no time for—" But she was already moving down the corridor, as if sure he would follow.
"I have had horses readied, even one for you, Matt, just in case."
Egwene hesitated only a moment, then followed. Rand opened his mouth to call Moraine back. She had sworn to obey. Whatever she had to show him, he could see it another day.
"What could an hour hurt?" Matt muttered. Perhaps he was reconsidering.
"It would not be amiss for you to be seen this morning," Asmodian said. "Ravine might just know of it as soon as it happens. If he has any suspicions, if he has any spies who may have listened at keyholes, it might allay them for today."
Rand looked at Avienda.
"Do you also counsel delay?"
"I counsel that you listen to Moraine Sedai. Only fools ignore Aes Sedai."
"What could be at the docks more important than Ravin?" he growled, then shook his head.
"There was a saying in the Two Rivers, not that anybody said it where women could hear. The Creator made women to please the eye and trouble the mind. Aes Sedai were certainly no different in one respect."
1 hour.
The sun was not yet high enough to lift the city's walls' long shadow from the stone quay where Kadir's wagons were lined up, but he still mopped his face with a large handkerchief. It was only partly the heat that made him sweat. Great gray curtain walls stretching into the river at either end of the row of docks made the quay seem a dim box with him caught in it. There was nothing but broad, round-bowed grain barges docked here, and the same anchored in the river, waiting their turn to unload. He had considered slipping onto one when it cast off, but it meant abandoning most of what he still possessed. Yet, had he thought the slow passage downriver would take him anywhere except to his death, he would have. Lanfear had not returned to his dreams, but he had the burns on his chest to remind him of her commands. Just the thought of disobeying one of the chosen made him shiver, even with sweat rolling down his face. If only he knew who to trust, to the extent it was possible to trust any of his fellow dark friends. The last of his drivers, who had sworn the oaths, had vanished 2 days ago, very likely on one of the grain barges. He still did not know which Aiel woman had slipped that note under his wagon door.
You are not alone among strangers. A way has been chosen.
Though he had several possibilities in mind. The docks held almost as many Aiel as they did workmen, come to stare at the river. He had seen a few of those faces, more often than seemed reasonable, and some had looked at him consideringly. A few Kyrianen had as well, and a Tyran lord. That meant nothing by itself, of course, but if he could find a few men to work with. A mounted party appeared in one of the gateways, Moraine and Randall Thor leading the way with the Aes Sedai's warder as they threaded through the carts hauling grain sacks away. A wave of cheers rode with them. All glory to the Lord Dragon, and hail the Lord Dragon, and now and again, glory to Lord Matrim, glory to the Red Hand. For once, the Aes Sedai turned down toward the tail end of the line of wagons without so much as a glance at Kadir. He was just as glad. Even if she had not been Aes Sedai, even if she had not looked at him as if she knew every black corner of his mind, he would as soon not have looked too closely at some of the things she had filled his wagons with. Yesterday evening she had made him strip the canvas off that oddly twisted redstone door frame in the wagon just behind his. She seemed to take a perverse delight in making him help her himself with whatever she wanted to study. He would have covered the thing up again if he could bear to go near it, or could make any of his drivers do so. None with him now had seen Herod fall half through it in Rudion and half disappear. Herod had been the first to run away once they cleared the Jangai. The man had not been entirely right in his head after the warder hauled him back. But they could look at it, see the way the corners did not meet properly, how you could not follow it around with your eyes without blinking and growing dizzy. Kadir ignored the first three riders as much as the Aes Sedai had ignored him, and Matt Cawthon almost as much. The man was wearing his hat. He had never been able to find a replacement. The Aiel wench, Avienda, rode up behind the young Aes Sedai's saddle, both with their skirts pushed up to show their legs. If he needed any confirmation that the Aiel woman was betting Althor, he only had to see the way she looked at him. A woman who had taken a man to her bed always looked at him with that light of ownership in her eyes after. More importantly, Natail was with them. This was the first time Kadir had been this close to him since crossing the spine of the wall. Natail, who stood high in the Dark Friends. If he could get past the maidens to reach Natail. Suddenly Kadir blinked. Where were the maidens? Althor always had an escort of spear-wielding women. Frowning, he realized he could not see a single maiden among the Aiel on the quay or the docks.
Aren't you going to look at an old friend, Hadnan?
That melodious voice jerked Kadir around, gaping at a hatchet-nosed face, dark eyes almost hidden by rolls of fat.
Kylie?
It was impossible. No one survived alone in the waste except Aiel. She had to be dead. But there she stood, white silk straining over her bulk, ivory combs standing tall in her dark curls. A faint smile on her lips, she turned with a grace that still surprised him in a woman so large, and lightly climbed the steps into his wagon. For a moment he hesitated, then hurried after her. He would as soon Kylie Shaogi really had died in the waste. The woman was bossy and obnoxious. She need not think she was getting a penny of the little he had managed to salvage. But she stood as high as Jason Natail. Perhaps she would answer a few questions. At the least, he would have someone to work with. At the worst, someone to put blame on. Power went with standing high, but so did blame for the failures of those beneath you. More than once he had fed his superiors to those still higher up in order to cover himself. Carefully closing the door, he turned, and would have screamed if his throat had not clenched too tight for sound. The woman who stood there wore white silk, but she was not fat. She was the most beautiful woman he had ever seen. eyes like dark, bottomless mountain pools, woven silver belting her narrow waist, silver crescents in her shimmering black hair. Kadir knew that face from his dreams. His knees thudding to the floor shook breath loose.
"Great mistress," he said hoarsely. "How may I serve?"
Lanfear might have been looking at an insect, one she might crush beneath her slipper, or might not.
"By showing your obedience to my commands. I have been too busy to watch Randall Thor myself. Tell me what he has done, aside from conquering Carrion, what he plans to do."
"It is difficult, great mistress. One such as myself cannot come close to such as he."
An insect, those cool eyes said, allowed to live so long as it was useful. Kadir racked his brain for everything he had seen or heard or imagined.
"He is sending Aiel south in huge numbers, great mistress, though I do not know why. The Tyrans and Kyrianen do not seem to notice, but I don't think they can tell one Aiel from another."
Neither could he. He would not dare lie to her, but if she thought he had more use than he did...
"He has founded a school of some sort in a city palace that belonged to a house with no survivors."
At first, there was no way to tell whether she liked what she was hearing. But as he went on, her face began to darken.
"What is it you want me to see, Moraine?" Rand said impatiently, tying Jaden's reins to one wheel of the last wagon in line.
She was standing on tiptoe to peer over the side of the wagon bed at a pair of casks that seemed familiar. Unless he was mistaken, they held the two Quendiar seals, packed in wool for protection now that they were no longer unbreakable. He felt the Dark One's taint strongly here. It almost seemed to come from the casks, a faint miasma as from something rotting in a hidden place.
"It will be safe here,"
Moraine murmured. Lifting her skirts gracefully, she started up the line of wagons. Lan heeled her, a half-tame wolf, the cloak hanging down his back, all disturbing ripples of color and nothingness. Rand glared.
"Did she tell you what it was, Egwene?"
"Just that you had to see something, that you had to come here anyway."
"You must trust Aes Sedai," Avienda said, almost as levelly but with a hint of doubt.
Matt snorted.
"Well, I mean to find out now. Natale, go tell Bale I'll be with him in..."
At the other end of the line, the side of Kadir's wagon exploded, splinters scything down Aiel and townsfolk. Rand knew. He did not need goosebumps prickling his skin to know. He raced toward the wagon, after Moraine and Lan. Time seemed to slow, everything happening at once, as if the air were jelly clinging to each moment. Lanfear stepped out into stunned silence, except for the moans and screams of the injured. Something limp and pale and red-streaked, hanging from her hand, dragging behind her as she walked down invisible steps. Her face was a mask of carved ice.
"He told me, Luz Theron," she almost screamed, flinging the pale thing into the air.
Something caught it, inflated it for a moment into a bloody, transparent statue of Hadnan Kadir. His skin removed whole. The figure collapsed and fell as Lanfear's voice rose to a screech.
"You let another woman touch you! Again!"
Moments clinging, all happening at once. Before Lanfear reached the stones of the quay, Moraine lifted her skirts higher and began running straight toward her. Quick as she was, Lan was quicker, ignoring her shout of,
"No, Lan!"
Sword coming out, long legs carried him ahead of her, color-shifting cloak waving behind as he charged. Suddenly he seemed to run into an invisible stone wall, bounce back, try to stagger forward again. One step, and as if a giant hand had smashed him aside, he flew 10 paces through the air, crashing to the stones. While he was in midair, Moraine jerked forward, feet skidding along the pavement, until she was face to face with Lanfear.
It was only for a moment. The Forsaken looked at her as though wondering what could have gotten in her way. Then Moraine was flung to one side so hard she rolled over and over until she disappeared beneath one of the wagons. The quayside was in turmoil. Just moments since Kadir's wagon erupted, yet only the blind could not know the one power was being wielded by the woman in white. Along the docks, axes flashed, cutting ropes, freeing barges as their crews desperately fended the craft toward open water in flight. Bare-chested dockmen and dark-clothed townsfolk struggled to jump aboard. In the other direction, men and women milled and screamed as they fought to pass through the gates into the city. And among them, cotton sword-clad figures veiled themselves and rushed at Lanfear with spears or knives or bare hands. There could be no doubt she was the source of the attack. No doubt she fought with the power. They ran to dance the spears regardless. Fire rolled over them in waves. Arrows of it pierced those who came on with their clothes in flames. It was not as if Lanfear battled them or even paid them any real mind. She might have been brushing aside gnats or bite-me's. Those who fled burned as well as those who tried to fight. She moved toward Rand as if nothing else existed. Heartbeats only. 3 steps she had taken when Rand seized the male half of the true source, molten steel and steel-shattering ice, sweet honey and midden heap. Deep in the void, the fight for survival was distant, the battle before him scarcely less. As Moraine vanished beneath the wagon, he channeled, pulling the heat from Lanfear's fires, sinking it into the river. Flames that a moment before engulfed human forms vanished. In the same instant, he wove the flows again, and a misty gray dome came into being, a long oval enclosing him and Lanfear, and most of the wagons, an almost transparent wall that shut out all not already within. Even as he tied the weave, he was not sure what it was or where it had come from. Some memory of Luz Theron's, perhaps. But Lanfear's fires struck it and stopped. He could see people outside dimly, too many thrashing and flailing. He had taken the flames, not the searing of flesh. That stench still hung in the air. But none would burn now that had not already. Bodies lay inside, too, mounds of charred cloth, some stirring feebly, moaning. She did not care. Her channeled flames winked out. The gnats were dispelled. She never glanced aside. Heartbeats. He was cold in the emptiness of the void, and if he felt sorrow for the dead and dying and scarred, the feeling was so far off it might not have been. He was cold itself, emptiness itself. Only the rage of Sidene filled him. Movement to either side. Avienda and Egwene, eyes concentrated on Lanfear. He had meant to shut them out from this. They must have raced with him. Matt and Asmodian. Outside. The wall missed the final few wagons. In icy calm, he channeled air to snare Lanfear. Egwene and Avienda could shield her while he distracted her. Something severed his flows. They snapped back so hard that he grunted.
"One of them," Lanfear snarled. "Which is Avienda?"
Egwene threw her head back and wailed, eyes bulging, the world's agony shrieking from her mouth.
"Which?"
Avienda rose on tiptoes, shuddering, howls chasing Egwene's as they climbed higher and higher. The thought was suddenly there in the emptiness. Spirit woven so with fire and earth. There. Rand felt something being cut, something he could not see, and Egwene collapsed in a motionless heap, Avienda to hands and knees, head down and swaying. Lanfear staggered, her eyes going from the women to him, dark pools of black fire.
"You are mine, Luz Theron, mine!"
"No."
Rand's voice seemed to come to his ears down a mile-long tunnel. "Distract her from the girls." He kept moving forward, but did not look back.
"I was never yours, Mirin. I will always belong to Ilyena."
The void quivered with sorrow and loss, and with desperation as he fought something besides the scouring of Sidene. For a moment, he hung balanced.
"I am Randall Thor,"
and
Ilyena, ever and always my heart.
Balanced on a razor edge.
I am Randall Thor.
Other thoughts tried to well up, a fountain of them, of Ilyena, of Mirin, of what he could do to defeat her. He forced them down, even the last. If he came down on the wrong side,
I am Randall Thor.
Your name is Landfear, and I'll die before I love one of the Forsaken.
Something that might have been anguish crossed her face. Then it was a marble mask once more.
If you are not mine, she said coldly, then you are dead.
Agony in his chest, as if his heart was about to explode. In his head, white-hot nails driving into his brain. Pain so strong that inside the void he wanted to scream. Death was there, and he knew it. Frantically, even in the void frantic, emptiness shimmered, dwindled. He wove fire and spirit and earth, flailing it wildly. His heart was no longer beating. Fingers of dark pain crushing the void. Gray veil falling over his eyes. He felt his weave slice raggedly through hers. The burn of breath in empty lungs, lurch of heart beginning to pump again. He could see again. Silver and black flecks floated between him and a stone-faced Landfear, still catching her balance from the rebound of her flows. The pain was there in head and chest like wounds, but the void firmed, and bodily pain was remote. Well that it was distant, for he had no time to recover. Forcing himself to move forward, he struck at her with air, a club to knock her senseless. She slashed the weave, and he struck again, 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 each time that she sliced through his last weave. A furious rain of blows she somehow saw and countered, always moving closer. If he could keep her occupied for a moment more, if one of those invisible cudgels landed on her head, if he could get close enough to strike her with his fist. Unconscious, she would be as helpless as anyone else. Suddenly, she seemed to realize what he was doing. Still blocking his blows as easily as if she could see every one, she danced backwards until her shoulders hit the wagon behind her. And she smiled like winter's heart.
You will die slowly, and beg me to let you love me before you die, she said.
It was not at him directly that she struck this time. It was at his link to Sidene. Panic rang the void like a gong at the first knife-sharp touch, the power diminishing as it slid deeper between him and the source. With spirit and fire and earth, he cut at the knife blade. He knew where to find it. He knew where his link was, could feel that first nick. Her attempted shield vanished, reappeared, returned as fast as he could cut it, but always with that momentary ebbing of Sidene, moments when it almost failed, leaving his counterstroke barely enough to foil her attack. Handling two weaves at once should have been easy. He could handle 10 or more, but not when one was a desperate defense against something he could not know was there until it was almost too late. Not when another man's thoughts kept trying to surface inside the void, trying to tell him how to defeat her. If he listened, it might be Luz Theron Telamon who walked away, with Randall Thor, a voice sometimes floating in his head, if that.
I'll make both of those trolls watch you beg, Landfear said. But should I make them watch you die first, or you them?
When had she climbed into the open wagon bed? He had to watch her, watch for any hint that she was tiring, her concentration slipping. It was a vain hope. Standing beside the twisted doorframe Tirangrial, she looked down at him, a queen about to pass sentence. Yet she could spare time for chill smiles at a dark ivory bracelet that she turned over and over in her fingers.
Which will hurt you the most, Luz Theron? I want you to hurt. I want you to know pain such as no man has ever known.
The thicker the flow to him from the source, the harder it would be to cut. His hand tightened on his coat pocket, the fat little stone man with his sword hard against the heron branded into his palm. He drew on Sidene as deeply as he could, till the taint floated in the emptiness with him like misting rain.
Pain, Luz Theron.
And there was pain. The world swallowed in agony. Not heart or head this time, but everywhere, every part of him, hot needles stabbing into the void. He almost thought he could hear a quenching hiss at each thrust, and each came deeper than the last. Her attempts to shield him did not slow. They came faster, stronger. He could not believe she was so strong. Clinging to the void, to searing, freezing Sidene, he defended himself wildly. He could end it, finish her. He could call down lightning, or wrap her in the fire she herself had used to kill. Images darted through the pain. A woman in a dark merchant's dress, toppling from her horse, the fire-red sword light in his hands. She had come to kill him with a fistful of other dark friends. Matt's bleak eyes.
I killed her.
A golden-haired woman lying in a ruined hallway where, it seemed, the very walls had melted and flowed.
Ilyena, forgive me!
It was a despairing cry. He could end it, only he could not. He was going to die. Perhaps the world would die. But he could not make himself kill another woman. Somehow it seemed the richest joke the world had ever seen.
Wiping the blood from her mouth, Moiraine crawled out from beneath the tail of the wagon and rose unsteadily to her feet, the sound of a man's laughter in her ears. In spite of herself, her eyes darted, searching for Lan, found him lying almost against the foggy gray wall of the dome that stretched overhead. He twitched, perhaps trying to find strength to rise, perhaps dying. She forced him out of her mind. He had saved her life so many times that by rights it should have belonged to him, but she had long since done what she could to see that he survived his lone war with the Shadow. Now he must live or die without her. It was Rand laughing, on his knees on the stones of the quay, laughing with tears streaming down a face twisted like a man being put to the question. Moiraine felt a chill. If the madness had him, it was beyond her. She could only do what she could do, what she must do. The sight of Lanfear hit her like a blow. Not surprise, but the shock of seeing what had been in her dreams so often since Roydion. Lanfear standing on the wagon bed, blazing bright as the sun with Saidar, framed by the twisted red stone Turangrial, as she stared down at Rand, a pitiless smile on her lips. She was turning a bracelet in her hands. An Angrial, unless Rand had his own Angrial, she should be able to crush him with that. Either he did, or Lanfear was toying with him. It did not matter. Moiraine did not like that circle of carved, age-dark ivory. At first glance it seemed to be an acrobat, bending backwards to grip his ankles. Only a closer look would show that his wrists and ankles were bound together. She did not like it, but she had brought it out of Roydion. Yesterday she had taken the bracelet from a sack of odds and ends and left it lying there at the foot of the doorframe. Moiraine was slight, a small woman. Her weight did not disturb the wagon at all as she pulled herself up. She winced as her dress caught on a splinter and tore, but Lanfear did not look around. The woman had dealt with every threat except Rand. He was the only corner of the world she acknowledged in the least right then. Suppressing a small bubble of hope, she could not allow herself that luxury. Moiraine balanced upright a moment on the wagon tail, then embraced the true source and leaped at Lanfear. The Forsaken had an instant's warning, enough to turn before Moiraine struck her, clawing the bracelet away. Face to face they toppled through the doorframe Turangrial. White light swallowed everything.